and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 409. My name is James Gilmore, and once again, back on the podcast trail with me is Emily Soden.
Hello, friendly people.
It's probably just mere minutes before this podcast goes live. We are going to record this and then I'm going to chuck it up because it's the end of a Friday and there's so much going on. Who said they could release all these new games and news on Friday? Who allowed this to happen?
Satan.
Oh, that guy. Oh.
I saw him leaving the office earlier. Guy.
Oh, the bugger. He left that unwashed spoon in the sink. Oh,
he didn't
just like him.
He left the coffee machine dirty. Didn't pull out the grounds or anything.
This is disgusting. I can't believe we allowed him in the building in the first place. But then Suzanne on the front desk, she's easy when it comes to letting people in. I've got to have a word with her. I'm contacting HR because she's letting us all down.
What an asshole.
Yeah. We don't even have an office. What are we talking about?
Welcome to the podcast. Yay!
Hey, it's Friday and all we're going to die from Satan's coffee grounds.
Don't think I never expected to hear that sentence ever.
Right, so what's happening this week? Let's get straight into this because we've got a lot to cover. We have got exciting news on the announcement of the iPhone 8. We got places, we got dates, we got names, one name, Tim Cook, but still, it's important. We've got announcement of the Nindies Summer Showcase Games. Loads of stuff coming to your Switch, very exciting. Plus a whole bunch of new releases, including Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. It's finally here, and we've got the Inside Skinny, something on Nobleman 1896. Another Angry Birds game, as if you needed one. Plus a very brief interview with the folks behind Top Gear Road Trip about what it's like to produce games off such a massive global license. First of all, though, a bit of news. New content for Talisman. I hate the word content. Hashtag content.
Why?
It's an awful word that people in the media use. They're just producing more hashtag content, and it just makes me ill.
You're an odd, precious little flower.
Oh, shush you. But it's apt in this case. More stuff is coming for Talisman, the big digital board game. We're getting the Dragon expansion. It's not free, it's £1.99, but it does give you 300 new cards. It messes with the center ring of the board itself to change the options and stuff like that. Plus, a little bit of a mess up with the UI to make it a little bit more easy and accessible to those who are newcomers. I mention this because we're actually covering a bunch of board games more on both Pocket Gamer and AppSpy. We sort of partnered up with Asmodee to do a board game section on PG, and I'm doing these like weekly videos which give introductions to board games, including Catan, which is what I've been doing this week. Have you ever played Catan, like in board game form or digital?
I have not. Can't say I have.
See, I hadn't until quite recently, and I was always put off because those agricultural Euroboard games, which is kind of the, I think, more highbrow of the two types of board games, the other being Ameritrash, which are the games where it's mostly people shooting things. I don't care about agriculture, Emily.
Was it something you hoped would work, and then it was just like, nope?
Most games are sort of some kind of wish fulfillment thing or, you know, fantasy play out. And it's like, do you want to be a farmer or do you want to build up a small settlement in Europe next to a mountain with some ore in? And the answer's always been no.
There is one game which might change your mind, Mr. Gilmore. Stardew Valley. It's not a board game, but it's coming and I'm just very excited about it.
That's that sort of Animal Crossing-esque build stuff up thing, isn't it?
Yeah, if you badmouth Stardew to me, we're not going to be friends anymore.
Hey, I've not played it, like I say, because farming is for losers, so I...
You wait, it's so charming. It's charming, okay? Charming.
Obviously, I love Catan now, having done a video all about it, so it's obviously amazing. But Talisman, you can get new stuff for if you want to pay a little bit of cash. Now, iPhones are on the horizon. A matter of weeks, we are talking about. September the 12th is going to be the date. Apple has literally 2 hours ago just sent out the invites for the press conference. So they will stand up there and they will say, here's the new iPhone 8. It's kind of the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone thing. So they're pitching this as a big old deal and making a lot out of the new features it's going to have and the differences. Basically, we've talked about it on the podcast, but it looks like they're going with this no bezel, all screen, no fingerprint like revamp. So it's going to be a mostly screen phone.
Oh, there's going to be so many broken iPhones.
But it figures because the Samsung 8 has also come out with, it's basically a screen with a tiny little bit of bezel at the top and the bottom, but that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. They're kind of a bit neck and neck, these two, aren't they?
So the new frontier appears to be just like you're just holding a screen and it's nothing but screen. And I've never used a device like that. The one I've got at the moment, this Xiaomi Redmi Note, is a big thing and there's very, very tiny amounts of bezel on either side. So it is basically all screen, but it's not, you know, entirely. You've got the edge at the moment, haven't you? And that's got screen all the way to the edge and around the edge as well.
It does. It's a surprisingly useful feature.
Yeah, you mentioned. I've never actually had any hands-ons with it, so... But it looked kind of interesting. But I don't know. See, to me, I've always got that part of me that's like, where do I hold it then? I have to hold it just at the side. If my fingers even wrap around just slightly, I'm going to accidentally start pressing things. So I'm wondering if the bezel is a practical thing that's useful to have?
Yeah, in all honesty, I do. I have the same sort of thing. Well, I've got... oh, balls, what are they called? I've got those little sticky things on the back of my phone case, and because my hands are too small to actually hold my phone.
Oh, so the little support grip doodads.
Yeah, pop sockets. That's what they are.
Okay.
The amount of times I've actually gone to pick up my phone or gone to use my phone, and my crazy scatty hands have like fallen on the screen or something, or pressed a back button, or like I have to have support if I'm trying to hold the phone in one hand and like use my thumb like a regular person.
Like a normal human.
I just can't reach. So I had to put a second pop socket on the bottom of the phone.
Oh my God.
But I do have very small hands.
Sounds like a feat of mechanical engineering at this point.
It is, and the back is so pretty.
Sprockets and that hanging off the back of it.
Yeah, yeah, I've got a bloody cat and a spaceship. A spaceship?
A spaceship?
Cat in a spacesuit, I meant to say.
Oh, okay. Exciting. Anyway, you'll be able to find out for yourself when they give you all the spiel, plus information about the Apple Watch 3. You guys, how the Apple Watch? Oh, that took off. Everyone's
doesn't
got
Glenn
one
have
now.
An Apple Watch?
Yeah, but it was, I think it was given to him by Apple.
Does he actually use it?
Well, I mean, I suspect it's on its wrist and tells the time, but as far as people actually going out and buying them and in them, I mean, I don't even know what a normal watch looks like anymore, Em, because there are so many Apple Watches everywhere.
Yeah. It's like everything is just screens. What happened to the good old days of the past?
A watch that reliably tells the time, provided you charge it every 12 hours.
Yeah.
So, look forward to that on the 12th of September, and what we reckon is you'll be able to get the pre-orders in for around September the 22nd, when stuff will start to go on sale. So these are rough times at the minute, but expect basically next couple of weeks, new phones. We'll be covering them in depth, obviously, on the site. So look forward to that. Now, you have covered for us the announcement of the Switch Nindies, which is Nintendo's indie summer showcase.
Yeah, it was almost as good as the first one, mainly because like I was more excited about all of the games in the first Nindies one.
Okay.
But they had some fantastic games come out recently. Not recently, but, you know, shown off. And people in the comments are very excited and around the web. And also it's been proven that the Switch is a very supportive system for indie games. Sorry, I could not think of my words just then.
Well, this is Nintendo trying to make good on the promise of, like, we're going to support little indie developers and all that, because it became the trendy thing to do, and Sony did it with the PlayStation Vita and said, hey, you've spent £200 on a console, so come and play this little £3 Flash game. But Nintendo's never been as good at supporting the little teeny tiny independent developers. But now we see games coming on, things like Super Meat Boy Forever and Shovel Knight, which granted are already well-established indie games that we've seen on other platforms, but whatever. But I also saw some things I had not seen before, such as Earth Atlantis, which was a... You know how Game Boy games have that monochromatic thing going on?
Yeah.
Where it's like green. This is like, imagine that, only it's kind of that 2.5D but it's also a sepia colour, so it's kind of chrome, and you're like a little submarine running around this underwater submerged city, like floating through what looks like the inside of the Eiffel Tower or something, shooting up crazy looking crabs and fish and everything, and that looks like potentially Switch fun.
Yeah, I'd say so. I don't know if it's my preference or something like that, but I really enjoy games that sort of look on the simpler side of things.
Mm-hmm. Rather than trying things minimal.
Yeah. Like, rather than trying to beef it up with all these sort of amazing graphics and things like that, so long as a game has solid mechanics and, you know, hopefully a solid story or something, you know, to keep you going, nothing else really matters to me. I like simplicity.
Well, photorealism is a dead end, really. It's very impressive in movies and that, and it's impressive to see things like Hellblade running, but ultimately, like, it is gameplay and hopefully narrative. And the thing with photorealistic stuff, or stuff that aims for photorealism, is it ages really badly. Because in 10 years, inevitably, everything that looked realistic at the time looks rubbish in comparison. Even Gollum looks a bit dated at this point when you go back to Lord of the Rings. It's like, ooh, it doesn't look great. But it was an essential step to get where we are. However, when you take sort of stylized graphics, they age beautifully. Because they never intended to look super real. They always just look lovely because they were a stylistic expression.
Yeah, so well, that's why bit graphics are still a thing.
Absolutely. I mean, there's other stuff that's even more low res here. Poly Bridge, I saw, which is a bridge building thing done in like really, really low scale polys. So that could be potentially fun. We've got other big news. SteamWorld Dig 2 has been confirmed for the Switch. That's nice because SteamWorld Dig is really good and SteamWorld Heist is wicked. That whole franchise is brilliant.
John, it's awful. I still haven't played it.
You've got a Switch. No excuse now.
I know.
A weird pop-up. No More Heroes. Travis Strikes Again. So Suda51's back at it with his postmodern franchise, as all Suda51 games inevitably are postmodern. And yes, Travis is back and he's still angry. And the bat is going to... games.
Something. Bats, fights, phantom video game consoles.
Yeah, it gets sucked into a game console, apparently. It wasn't even clear in the trailer. One thing I did notice was the... because it had that cel-shaded art style, the original No More Heroes.
Yeah.
This one, it's like cel-shaded, but it's like everything's made of chrome.
Yeah, it's definitely got a funny kind of sheen to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, everything's well super shiny. But the Suda51 people are very, very happy about it. So there's a full list of 20 of the buggers, which M has kindly posted up for you with accompanying videos. So go and find that over on PG and get the full skinny on this Nintendo Summer Showcase. Top Gear started out as a quaint little British show that then spawned series in countries all around the world. The current series, with its newer presenters, including the likes of Matt LeBlanc, is on TV, and there is a mobile game tie-in called Top Gear Road Trip. I'm joined by Yari Puana, who is the creative director of Motorious Entertainment and the game itself. Thank you for joining me today, Yari.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, I'm really interested to know, because I've not had a chance to speak to many people who've worked on a massive license that they don't actually own or create themselves. So with Top Gear, like with a lot of movie tie-ins, you're effectively commissioned or given this project, like, right, we need someone to make a game to tie into our product. In this case, the product is Top Gear. What's the process that you go through as a developer to work out, A, what kind of game am I going to make? And B, how am I going to make sure that the game that I deliver is satisfying to not just players, but also to the person who has effectively commissioned the game?
Well, actually, the story in this case is slightly different. Okay. I have a background myself with Top Gear. Mm-hmm. I've been the editor-in-chief and publisher of Top Gear magazine here in Finland for 5 or 6 years now.
Oh, I see.
Before that, I was in the games business, and naturally, I was looking at Top Gear games that are available, available at that time. And I thought that I really would like to play a slightly different game myself. And so I contacted BBC, the Top Gear people, and said that I have a couple of ideas that I would like to pitch to them. And they invited me to London, so I went with three different ideas, hoping to get one approved. Mm-hmm. So we had an idea about combining match 3 with racing and two others that we haven't yet announced. And to my surprise, they were very, very positive about all the ideas. So we decided to go forward with this one.
Right.
So okay. The whole idea and design and initiation came from our side.
I see. When we see large properties getting mobile tie-ins, they often take a few forms. So pick at random, I don't know, there was a, say, the Hunger Games movie tie-in or the Godzilla one that came out with that movie. Rather than necessarily tying them into the type of game it is, they tend to take, like, oh, we'll do a three-lane autorunner because Temple Run was a big thing. Or, oh, we'll do a match 3 puzzler because, you know, it's a very popular genre and, you know, Candy Crush is really big. So they tend to take a few default forms that we're sort of used to seeing. Yours is more of a battle match 3 puzzler where you match up the colours and you're using it to push your car further forward, allow the vehicle you're driving to overtake other vehicles. So it's got a slight twist on it there, but it's still one of those familiar genres. Why did you choose match 3? What was the theory behind that?
Well, first of all, regarding TV series and movies, I think with a TV series we are much, much better off than with a movie, because movie has the publicity maybe once or twice, whereas TV series like Top Gear, it's constantly on worldwide. Every week or perhaps every day you can see it or catch it on TV.
Yeah.
So we had an idea about how to slightly evolve the current match 3 thing. We call it action match 3, meaning that when you make a match on the game, you can instantly see something happening on the upper side of the screen. So we thought that this might be something that could be used with Top Gear, and we made a prototype about Rocket Robin being launched into space in Scotland. And it worked beautifully. It's still in the game, and it's as fun as it was when we prototyped it first.
When it comes to the license itself, you say that you pitched for the license and they were like, yeah, we like the sound of this, go ahead and make it. But when you go ahead and start making the game, are you given restrictions, as in these are the things you can mention, here are like the properties you're allowed to use? For example, cars themselves obviously feature in the game. Were you able to get like official licenses, or is that out of the question because you won't see Porsches or, you know, Lamborghinis in there, or you know, what were the restrictions you were given?
Well, obviously, there are restrictions on how the brand is treated. I knew most of them, having been so closely involved with Top Gear on the media side. And then there were some other stuff, we would have perhaps liked to use the presenters in this game, but it was not possible. And regarding the actual car brands, we decided not to use them because they really wouldn't add anything to the game.
So I imagine it would have been kind of an expensive outlay to try and get those licenses without any real gameplay benefits.
That's right. There's a cost involved, and with a different kind of title, they would add something to the user experience, but not in this case. That's how we felt.
How long did it take to put together from like the idea, from the pitch moment, to it getting out there in the app stores? How long does it take to make this kind of thing?
It was about 1.5 years.
So it's a relatively, you know, a fairly long development cycle. I think there's a perception for, you know, games that we see a lot of. For example, if you see the Minions auto runner, that people assume that, oh, this is just an existing engine, and all they've done is they've reskinned it with the Minions, and it's taken a couple of months, and then out it goes. But you're saying that's not what this is at all.
Yes, the thing is that we didn't reskin anything. We invented the whole action match 3, as I said. So that took a long time to polish and get it just right so that it's fun. Reskinning an existing product was really not something that either we nor BBC were interested in doing.
Do you find it tough to compete in a marketplace that's so crowded? I mean, the App Store was already a very, very busy place. Getting visibility is very tough. You've obviously got the Top Gear brand, which is a huge boost in terms of like people recognizing and wanting to download it. But in terms of like, I don't know, a wall of match 3 puzzlers that you're coming up against, what was your feeling about how are we going to make sure that this one stands out?
I'm feeling very positive about the brand. So Even though there are lots of match 3 games with candy and cakes and whatever, I feel that this is totally different. So I'm not concerned about that at all.
You're on Android as well, is that right?
Yes, Android was released today.
Do you feel that there are differences between those two platforms in terms of the way that people play games? Or do you think they're very much the same thing? Because we hear a lot of iOS developers trying to go onto Android, and for example, they'll put their game out at a premium price and find that they have a lot of trouble selling any units on Android versus, for example, iOS.
Well, I can imagine that happening on the premium side, but from our point of view, since we are doing a free-to-play mobile game, there really isn't that much of a difference. At least we haven't noticed anything yet.
You said you were working on some other games, two other ones that haven't yet been brought out in the app stores.
Concept stage right now, so we will announce them at a later date.
Okay, so you're keeping them under wraps at the minute.
Indeed.
It's been a couple of weeks since the game went live. What's the feedback been like? And what do you feel has worked about it and people have connected with? And what are areas that maybe you're working on in terms of updates or improvements?
The absolutely most fun part of it is launching the Rocket Robin into space. It's level number 5 and so on. And it really is as fun as it was when we first prototyped it. That's really something that everyone should try. We have noticed that perhaps it's slightly too difficult when you start, so we are making it a bit easier.
Okay.
We are developing currently a full multiplayer for it so that you can play against your friends in an asynchronous way. So that's going to be a major milestone. I'm not promising it's going to be October, but that's our initial goal.
Was there ever any consideration of trying to get any of the people from the show itself involved?
We were discussing about getting them into the game, and it's possible that it might happen at a later date.
What about balancing in terms of these games? Obviously, they're free to play, so people can just download them for nothing, but naturally, you have the in-app purchase system, which is, of course, where the game starts to monetize. How do you get the balance right between making it playable for those who don't want to spend money, but also encouraging people to part with a bit of cash at some point?
Well, we do have some experienced developers with background at Rovion, Supercell, and Next Games, so I'm counting on their professional attitude.
To steer you right. I see. Okay. And in terms of what you're working on in the future, are you moving straight into these prototype Top Gear games, or do you have other projects that you're working on separately?
Yes, we actually have a small arcade game that we are launching within 2 or 3 weeks called Circle Breaker. It's going to be soft launch in Finland within days. That's something totally different. It's a fun little arcade game. But right after that, the whole team is continuing with Top Gear Road Trip and the concepts that I mentioned previously.
That's great. Well, thank you ever so much for talking to me today, Jari, and best of luck with the future releases.
Thank you very much.
Just a short interview this week, making room for a packed out and about section. We're going to start with Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, which has been released earlier this week, has been reviewed by Glenjamin, who is still halfway up a tree or just come back from being up a tree on holiday. So he's not here to tell it himself, but we do have his words, and his words, ooh, they are praising of the game itself. He gave it a gold award, said it is gorgeous, it is amusing, it is challenging, it is bold statement, one of the best. In fact, he says, he categorically says, the best exclusive on Nintendo Switch so far.
Well, those are harsh words against Legend of Zelda.
I know, that's a bold statement. Over the game, everyone's called, like, the best game Nintendo's ever made.
Yeah, to be fair, though, that wasn't an exclusive, it was still on the Wii U, so...
Oh, that's
okay.
True.
Okay, Glenn. All right, Glenn, you're off the hook.
That's good wiggle room. Yeah, I like that. Nice. You're absolutely right. So there, he can say that without getting blasted by Zelda fans. We've talked about it plenty. XCOM-style strategy game, a fusion between the two franchises. We are as surprised as anyone else that the thing you really needed in your life was a Rabbids game. But there you go. It's been getting praise from all quarters, and Glenn loved it. I'm not just going to read out his review. You go and read his review. And obviously we'll talk to him a bit when he's next on the podcast next week about it. But safe to say, it's really, really good. He really, really likes it. And so does everybody by the sounds of it. So a safe bet that you'll probably enjoy your Mario and Rabbids. Now, on to stuff that's hit iOS this week. Nobleman, 1896. A game which you've been following on forums and news channels for like over a year now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been quite a while. So this isn't... I don't even know why I'm so disappointed by it.
Yeah, so I've played it and we've reviewed it on AppSpy and Pocket Gamer, and not impressed them. Not impressed at all. Which is a shame, because the developers behind it, Forsaken Media, have done some good stuff. They did Bug Heroes, which was a fun little multiplayer third-person shooter sort of thing, which was good. They did War Tortoise and other tower defense style games, which were, you know, it wasn't amazing, but it was fine, it was good. But then they've fallen down when it comes to more open third-person shooters. For example, Heroes in Castles, which we said was bad, and the internet got really cross with us. Now, Nobleman 1896 is kind of almost steampunky, pre-First World War, people running around with, you know, old-fashioned weaponry and whatnot, in big open fields, trying with armies. So you can take control of a hero character, but you've got like three groups of militia behind you, and you charge into battle, and you take cover behind little, you know, bits of wood or whatever, bunkers, and you fire at the enemy and you try and kill them. But that's not all. When you go back to the map screen, there's this sort of strategy style game where you have a tile and you've got your enemy base and you've got to, you know, advance your troops along it in a more almost civilization style, where you're, you know, jumping around and taking turns and playing what you would consider a much more strategy game. And then you go back and there's a base building game at the back of that as well, so you can upgrade your individual barracks and everything and do all this business. And it's got so much going on that it fails to pull focus appropriately on any individual aspect, and as a result it's really not good.
Yeah. Do you think they might have bit off a little bit more than they could chew?
It's ambitious. We say in the review it's really ambitious, and you've got to give people props for that. They haven't played it safe, but and it looks okay. Like, visually, you could look at the screenshots and go, oh, yeah. But no, when it comes to it, the actual third-person shooty stuff is not good at all. You're just charging around empty spaces. The cover shooty bits are rubbish. When you actually get into cover, it's like everyone's always miles away, because there's one piece of cover every like half a kilometer. So inevitably you stop and hide and there's no one to shoot. So you try and run towards the enemy and there's no cover. So you end up just having to like stop in the middle and then get shot, which isn't great. You're also trying to command the rest of your army behind you and like stop, pause the game, pull out, start drawing arrows and drawing lines. You go here, you go here. And it's like, it's trying to do everything and it succeeds at none of it, which is a real shame. But you can see the video of your AppSpy and read Harry's Nobleman 1896. We would maybe advise against it. There's another Angry Birds game.
Oh, it's just what we wanted in life.
What's more, it's another Angry Birds Match 3 game, which is weird because we've already had an Angry Birds Match 3 game. It was called Angry Birds Battle, I want to say. And it was one of those action ones where you match colours and then your birds fight at the top of the screen, depending on how well you've matched your colours. This one is a bit more traditional, I think, in its match three-ing. You've just got full, you know, big old grid, Candy Crush style, and the style of the birds is the movie style rather than the traditional series style. But I haven't played it. I'm probably not going to.
I was about to say, are you going to?
Nah.
I won't judge you.
The Angry Birds Match is what it's called. It's free to play, obviously. Google Play, App Store right now. Golden Axe, Emily!
Yay, Golden Axe.
I had Golden Axe. Well, I did have it, but the one I had first and played much more of was actually Golden Axe 2.
Yeah, and honestly, I had both of them, and they're kind of like, I mean, this is me, I haven't played it for like, what, 20 years?
Yeah.
Because I was a young'un back in the day.
I played it recently.
Yeah, that's because you got your jammy little console.
I do. but I bought that game, and that's the only ROM I downloaded, honest.
Okay.
And it was great because I got to jump on the back of a little dragon, and then you hit the dragon on the back of the head, and he goes, and breathes fire, and it's wicked.
Yeah, to be fair, that was always the best part of the Golden Axe sort of games, is that once you start taking out some of the bad guys, then you can steal their dragons.
I love that bit. It's always fun. So they've started with the first game, sensibly, for as part of their Sega Forever free-to-play versions. I downloaded it. I had a quick go. It's just like playing it on an emulator on a small screen with touchscreen controls that aren't really ideal.
Yeah.
But it works, you know, just like all the other games have worked with that, you know, if you've played the Sonic one and the rest of them, you sort of know what to expect from this. So you can download that for free or pay £1.99 if you want to unlock the rest of the game. A game that I've never played, Max and the Magic Marker. This is a game from back in 2011. Oh my. And it is coming in a remastered form to iPhone and iPad. I think it should be out now, or it might be out tomorrow. I'm not sure which. But either way, by the time you hear this, £2.99 or $2.99. It's one of those games that's a platformer that lets you draw stuff on the screen. So on iPhone, you can think of things like Pengy Has a Dream recently, or if you want to go back to the obvious one, Scribblenauts, as a game where you just draw things and they appear and you can create platforms for yourself and then interact with the environment and all of that. So you can go and have a look at that. Colin Lane is back with more golf games. He of Golf Zero. He's got Battle Golf Online, which is now you aiming for either golf holes in the middle or your opponent's head. That's the aim of the thing. I haven't played it, but I do like Colin's stuff, and so we'll give it a look and see how it works. We've got a strategy game called Mini Guns, Mini Space Guns, which is an RTS with lots of little toy soldiers. And because of the colour scheme and everything, it immediately makes me think of Advance Wars. But it plays out in real time, rather than it being grid or hex-based. That one's another free-to-play affair. You can go and download that at the minute. The Walking Dead March to War appeared.
Kind of snuck out, didn't it?
Yeah, well, it was off my radar because I played it when it was in soft launch, I don't know, like 4 months ago or something, and was less than impressed. It's one of these, like, you've got the big map on the screen and you're just sending people off to locations to grab things and then come back. And it claims to be built around a big old story, but not so much from what I played. Free to play, obviously. One I did play and was actually sort of, I'm going to play more of, something called Questland, which takes the first-person perspective RPG-style game, so imagine a Skyrim or whatever, mix it with the old-fashioned screen-by-screen first-person games you used to get in 16-bit worlds, so those Eye of the Beholder-style games, and more recently something like Severed, which was really beautiful, and it feels like they've taken some inspiration from Severed, to be honest with you, only made it even more automatic. So you create your little warrior, and then you choose a quest, and then you hold the device in portrait mode, and you start to walk down a path automatically, and you'll encounter some enemies, and then you tap on the enemies, choose your different attacks, if you want to attack with a melee combat move, or if you want to select your fireball and fire that at them. Once they're killed, you'll continue to walk down the screen, and you just destroy the waves as you go through, and then that completes the quest. Eventually, you'll hit a boss or something like that, big old spider. But visually speaking, it is very similar to Severed, in as much as it's a very minimal cartoon style, but a really, really nice one.
Yeah.
It seems to bridge the gap to me between that almost auto-playing RPG style that Glenn really likes, while still having a decent amount of input where you are actually choosing your attacks and it's playing out in real time, so you do have to be involved and pay attention and then get the stuff and level up your character. But there's something about the presentation of it all and the flow back and forth between the menu screens that it's a nice place to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't put me off in the way that a lot of these free-to-play grindathons do. So I think I would say that's worth a look if you fancy it. Questland, again, is the name. It's only on iOS at the minute, though. Finally, where the Nintendo Switch is concerned, League of Evil has come over. We mentioned this a week or two ago. I don't know if you're familiar with League of Evil, Em.
I admit I'm not.
It came out on iOS and was, like, you know, years ago, and was an example of, hey, look, you can do fast-paced, hardcore, agile platformers on touchscreens and actually make them work. It's by Ravenous Games, and they've done a load of stuff since. They've kind of stuck in that niche. And now they've brought the original League of Evil over to the Switch, which is interesting because now it has to go up against normal hardcore games with physical controls. because it doesn't, you know, need to use touchscreen anymore. So I wonder how well it will stand shoulder to shoulder now it's got real actual controls. I suspect it'll be all right, but it's £7.19 or $7.99, which is a lot more expensive than the kind of, you know, £2-3 you'd pay on iOS. So I'm curious, let's say, to see how that plays out, but you'll have to let me know if you ever get your hands on it, because I'm still switchless.
Someday, James, when the Switch drops in price and you can bother to buy one.
It's not a bothered issue, it's just a financial issue.
Yeah.
Never get married, boys and girls.
To be fair, you are having two weddings, though.
Love costs. Yeah, but I'm not paying for one of them. So.
Oh, that's right.
Otherwise, there would not be two weddings. let's be realistic here. Barely handle the one. But yay, matrimony.
Love, so yeah. Fun. Actually, it's my partner and mine. It's our anniversary today.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Happy anniversaries.
Thank you. 6 years and he hasn't killed me yet.
That's good. That is very good, actually. 6 years is good. Well, you've got officially one more year before he has to propose, lest be considered lame by everybody.
Maybe. I don't know. I'd rather get another cat.
See, this is an attitude I can get on board with. Where were you when Vivi was being brought up, given her Disney ideals of weddings and whatnot?
But still, actually, I say this, but I'm quite fond of weddings and things, just because they're kind of fun and a time to celebrate.
It will be fun. And
so
celebrate.
I'm excited for your weddings.
Good. Good. All right, then. I think we've crammed as much as we can into the new releases section there and the podcast as a whole. We should be back with more people next week. So do join us again, like, subscribe and all the rest of it. And welcome to the new listeners who came in after last week. There seemed to be a bit of a surge. So good to have you. Stick around. We'll talk more games in the future. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
See ya.